Hey guys, this is Anthony Bandiero here, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing you another webinar. This class is live. I got to tell you that if you're watching this, that means that you're watching it on demand, and that but there's hundreds of cops here right now, and so I'm broadcasting from my hotel in Castle Rock, Colorado, where I'm teaching today and tomorrow. Okay, so let's kind of get into this. Some quick disclaimers: you cannot be a lawyer unless you have a disclaimer. I guess. So the first one is that laws and agency SOPs may be more restrictive. Okay. We're going to talk about a very, complicated topic today, especially when it involves tents and homeless people and so forth. Courts, we want to get this right. We want to make good case law. We want to have compassion when it's deserved and so forth, right? So the point is that look at your laws, look at your state standard operating procedures. Also realize that, we are going to talk about a lot of Fourth Amendment issues. that's interesting. Okay. And then if you have any doubts about the legality, that's awesome. If you have any doubts about the legality of your actions, push up the chain. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. Okay. So let's talk about RVs, right? Because the reason I bring this up is that a lot of people are living in their vehicles, okay? And so the argument comes up as like, hey, man, like if we're living in that vehicle, at what point does that become a home? Well, let me just first tell you this, okay? When can we search a vehicle under the motor vehicle exception? That's kind of the first thing I want to talk to you about. Hold on for 1 second. Let me just pause something here. I want to talk about, like, when is a vehicle become a home? Because if it's a home, the rules are a lot different, right? I want you to look at these four factors. This is what Blue to Gold teaches. Look at these four factors. Number one, you got to have probable cause. That just makes sense. Probable cause is a fair probability that evidence of a crime is going to be, in that vehicle. Number two, the vehicle cannot be on curtilage. Curtilage is an area that's protected like the home itself. And when the vehicle is on curtilage, the motor vehicle exception does not apply, right? And so, we get questions from our students about, hey, if we light somebody up and they pull into their driveway and then we got PC to search that vehicle, can we search it on curtilage? And my answer has to be no. I can't in good conscience and good faith tell you to search it under the motor vehicle exception, because it seems to me that the Supreme Court was very clear in Collins v. Virginia that the motor vehicle exception does not apply to curtilage. So you're going to need some kind of agency or consent, or you're going to have to get a warrant. The next one is you don't exceed the scope, right? That's the number four, but don't exceed the scope. You search it as if you had a warrant. That is one of the reasons why the motor vehicle exception is one of the most powerful exceptions on earth, because it really is the only exception where the Supreme Court has told us, hey, when you search that vehicle, you are making a judgment call. You are calling it in the field. You're not involving a judge. You're skipping us. And you're, regardless, if you have PC for a stolen laptop, you're not looking in the coin purse. And finally, the vehicle has to be apparently mobile, meaning that it has mobility. Now, I got to tell you, out of all the factors here, the courts seem to skip over this last, number three, the most apparently mobile. Why? Because they say, hey, even if the car is, immobile right now, then it's still a reduced expectation of privacy. Now, those four factors, generally speaking, do apply to recreational vehicles. How do we know this? We know this from California versus Carney. Mr. Carney is living the good life, man. He has a life that I want badly. He's living in an RV in San Diego. We have officers here from San Diego. I got to tell you, no place on earth has better weather than San Diego. But no place on earth has more regulations, taxes, dumb gun laws than California. So the point is he's living this good life. And since he lives in California, he probably gets a free check from the state regardless. So he's there and he's selling drugs. You know what? The California, they'll pay you money to be unproductive, but they ain't going to make you rich. Okay. It's not that unfair to the taxpayer. So he's doing a little side hustle. He's selling a little dope out of this RV. It's true, huh, Laura? It is true. I speak the sooth. So the DEA Basically develops probable cause, and his RV is in a parking lot. And I want you to think like Walmart parking lot, okay? Something like that, okay? Well, they get him out, they arrest him, they toss his RV. Now I got to tell you though, he is living in the RV, okay? He is living in it. That is his home, but it is also mobile, and he also uses it to drive around. It has the capability to drive around. Is this, can we search this under the motor vehicle exception? Yes or no? And Calvin, what's up, man? When am I coming back up to Elko, by the way? So I used to work in Elko. Okay, good job, my friends. Okay, the answer is yes under the Fourth Amendment. Now, some of you guys are saying no. You may be in a restrictive state like New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Washington, Oregon. You may be Alaska. You may be in one of those states, but generally speaking, this is not the rule under the Fourth Amendment in most states, okay? The Supreme Court has said our application of the vehicle exception has never turned on the other uses to which a vehicle might be put. The exception has historically turned on the ready mobility of the vehicle and on the presence of the vehicle in a setting that objectively, indicates that the vehicle is being used for transportation. So, yeah, see Fairfax, oh, South Carolina. Okay, so fine. So, when does a vehicle, an RV, become a home? Well, let's look at convenient access to the roadway, right? That's just kind of get like the vehicle in a Walmart parking lot, right? You know, that's going to indicate that the vehicle is still being used for public transportation. Permanent hookups, that is an indicator. The vehicle is registered, that kind of indicates that they're still looking to, you know, drive around with this, right? Other vehicles being used for transportation. Now, I have a lot of specialty units on this webinar right now. I got officers for the Pacific Northwest, right? A railroad. I got game wardens. I got park rangers, forestry and so forth. So let me just tell you something, okay? In my view, if the RV is in a setting that's associated with camping, and that space that they're on is a registered campsite, and it's delineated, it is, you know, bifurcated from everybody else's site. It has wood logs and or rocks and concrete padding and hookups and so forth. I believe under those facts, that vehicle, and it's all hooked up and they're camping, that vehicle is actually a home, or conversely, that area is curtilage. Okay. So when I have my officers out there that are working alone, you know, working, in the forest and so forth, and they come upon these vehicles, I think that the better argument is that it is a home, or at least it's curtilage. And that way we have Collins v. Virginia issue. But oftentimes you guys have what? You have exigency because you are solo. You don't have the capability to get a warrant on scene. Locking it down while other people can go and going back to the station down the mountain is probably not feasible, right? So the point is that I think that, you know, you're gonna have to start articulating exigency if the vehicle is on a campsite that is their own space, not open lands and open fields. Okay. So take it for what it's worth. What about disabled vehicles? Well, I told you before that out of all the four factors, rarely mobile, this one is the easiest. So the courts are going to let you search RVs, even if they have a flat tire, if they have no gas, if they have no battery, if they're involved in a fender bender, they're going to let you search it. Okay. Under the motor vehicle exception. Now, this Adams case was officer searched an RV that was being used as a residence. So we have, you know, an issue located on a rural lot, generator running connected to it. Other vehicles were on the lot being used for transportation and no convenient access to the public road. So they said the motor vehicle exception applied. What did the court say? They said that this was a domicile, not an RV. Therefore, they would need either consent, exigency, or a warrant. Okay, now this exception also applies to pool trailers, and I don't care personally, just between me and you, whether the attached or detached. The motor vehicle exception is on the ready mobility of the vehicle and its reduced expectation of privacy. Can a pull trailer that's detached in a parking lot be hooked up readily and pulled away? The answer is yes. Okay. So officers had probable cause that a pull trailer contained narcotics and searched it. This guy, Irvin, says that doesn't apply. No. Now you need a warrant. That's not the motor vehicle exception. And the court made it very clear that the motor vehicle exception applies to trailers. I've also seen a case where it was like a semi-truck, 18-wheeler trailer that was disconnected in like a pilot gas station type environment. And they searched without a warrant. I got to tell you, I'm glad they won. At the same time, why not get a warrant? If you're searching an 18-wheeler, it's probably a lot of dope. It's full of stolen property. It's probably not because somebody threw their 2 grams of meth in the back of the trailer, right? So my personal advice to you is just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? What are you saying, Amanda? What does the Crudo say? Okay, now you search it in the same manner as if you had a warrant. Let's watch this video.
So the reason I stopped you, a couple of reasons. One is your lane travels. I was traveling behind you, and I know it's a bigger vehicle, but you're driving on the white line, and you've crossed it several times.
Oh, yeah. This is my first time driving a rig. I'm practicing tiny house driving.
Okay. And where are you coming from?
I'm coming from Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Okay. I'm going to check this out. Would you mind coming to my back to my vehicle so I can get some information from you?
No, not at all.
You okay with that?
Do you have family out there or
no?
No?
Okay. You don't have anything illegal in the vehicle today, do you?
No.
No illegal drugs of any kind?
No.
No? You okay if I run the police dog around the outside of the vehicle?
Absolutely.
You okay with that?
Good boy.
My police dog's trained to detect the odor of marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. He's actually alerting to this passenger side of the vehicle, and with that open window, he's actually trying to go into the open window.
I have personal marijuana.
Yeah, personal marijuana. Okay, is there any large quantities of any drugs
in
there?
No, I just have a couple of joints.
You're not impaired in any way right now, are you?
No, I'm kind of nervous.
Okay, you're not drinking?
No, just hot tea.
Well, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna search the motorhome.
Okay.
If you just have a couple joints, and if you're not impaired, we'll do a few tests. If you're not impaired, then probably just write you a ticket. Okay?
You know what? I have to go to the bathroom. Can you come in there with me? So I can go. I mean, literally, I've had diarrhea like 4 times on this trip. I'm not kidding
okay.
you right
well,
now.
Well, I don't want you to do anything inside
no,
my car. So if
no.
you need to, if you need to do what
that
you
would be
need
really,
to do.
I really would appreciate it.
Okay.
In the bathroom is right there.
Okay, I'm just making sure there's no weapons in here, and then you can do what you need to do, okay?
479 case number is 15.
What's a nice RV?
49.
Can I help you?
Maybe in a minute here if I can't figure it out. This, all this luggage belong to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that cedar?
Yeah. A few pounds of marijuana right there. So I'm gonna place you in handcuffs, okay? For the marijuana. Let's go ahead and set your tee down. The reason you are in custody is not because of the personal use of marijuana, but the large quantities of marijuana that's in the storage container, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We'll go ahead and go back to the office and see how we can further this investigation. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 66 pounds.
It's kind of eye-opening just to see the amount of drugs that are actually being transported on the interstates.
All right. So I show that because that is a classic, you know, motor vehicle exception search on an RV, right? Even if she goes to court and says, Your Honor, you know, I live in this thing. This is my home. And it's clearly, objectively, it's clear and so forth. She's still going to lose, right? Because that is a classic Carney type of situation, right? And so now let's talk about any, if you have any questions on that, let me know. But the RVs are the easiest one to tackle. The next thing is when you're dealing with motels, hotels, sometimes the Holiday Inn, you got to know the rules here. So generally speaking, hotel rooms enjoy the same protections as the home. That just makes sense, right? I mean, you know, when you're staying at the Motel 6, well, you're not staying at the Motel 6, are you? Come on. That's ridiculous. You don't do drugs. But when you're staying at the Hampton Inn, is that your quasi home? The answer is yes. The courts have called that, they refer to it as transient lodging. Transient, not in that you're homeless. Transient, it's just transit. It's transitional from one place to another, okay? Now, Gilbert says, in New Mexico, we would be allowed to seize any narcotics in plain view, request a search warrant to continue the process. Yeah, that's Pennsylvania is like that too, by the way. All right. So real world limitations. What does that mean? What does it mean to have real world limitations? You know what it is? That when you're at a hotel, you better act correct. Okay. You better mind your P's and Q's, your pints and quarts, because they can kick you out. Okay. They can kick you out for what's called cause. Okay. So let's talk about, you know, what the rules are and so forth. Number one is, one is that the hotels have a common law right to eject you for cause, eject people for cause. Ejectment, eviction implies tenancy. So really the most appropriate word is ejecting, because you're like kicking out. You know, you don't evict Cousin Eddie that visits you for Christmas. You eject him by his shirt collar, right? Because he overstays his welcome. But I got to tell you, oh, Anthony, are you saying that in our report we should say ejectment? No, I mean, it'd be nice if you did, maybe, just because that is the proper word. But they can, for cause. Cause means that they have a reason, okay? But look, the reason is simply that they're violating the rules, okay? In other words, the reason cannot be based on some racial profiling, nationality, ethnicity, you know, so forth, right? That's what we're talking about for cause. It has to be for, you know, like partying, streaking, breaking stuff, being a nuisance to other guests. That's what we're talking about here. Number two is let the hotel decide what to do. I do not want to see you on your body-worn camera going up to the clerk at the Motel 6 and saying, man, we really had some problems with your tenant and your guest in room 101. I think you should just evict this guy. Can you just evict him? He's going to be a problem. That's not you to decide. I mean, you know, it's their problem, not your problem. So, but you can give them information. You can say, hey, look, we've had issues with this guy before. This is what he did down the street. You can say that. Maintain reasonable safety measures. What we mean by this is that you're allowed to be safe. You're allowed to facilitate the orderly ejectment of the guest. We'll talk about those cases. You can search the room after they're gone. Okay. Once they have been ejected, they no longer have a reasonable expectation of privacy in what? The room, in the dresser drawer, in the refrigerator, in the toilet bowl tank, in the ceiling tiles. Sometimes they hide drugs up there. That's not their property, okay? But they do have a privacy interest in non-abandoned property. What does that look like? That looks like, hey, you arrest the guy and, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning, and his hotel room is expired at noon. Well, okay, he lost his expectation of privacy of the room, but not his backpack that's in the room, because he did not abandon it under those circumstances. But you may be able to inventory it if it's going with you to the station and so forth. So just kind of keep that in mind. Let's talk about Huffins. So what happened here is that this guy got arrested at 1 p.m., okay? So he's already kind of past checkout time. His rental period expired at noon. Cops then got the manager's permission to search for him and found the gun under the mattress. Are we good? Right? Yes, because the room has been abandoned, you know. And but Anthony, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. That's not their fault. I mean, you know, it's, yeah, it's their fault they got arrested, but what about their argument that they if it wasn't for their arrest, they would have re-upped on the room? All I got to tell you is that is their problem, not yours, right? It's their problem. If they want to fool around and find out what happens in your town and get arrested, and they don't have a backup plan to get that room re-upped, then it's on them. That's just the way it works. So they'll have no expectation of privacy. Now, what about the backpack, though? They would likely have an expectation of privacy in the backpack. Okay. Under these facts, the backpack is probably not abandoned. All right. Our next case here is Musburger. So what happened here is that police were asked to help evict occupants, but a female that answered the door did not allow the police to enter. She's acting suspicious. She's like, "Okay, we'll do, you know, we'll do what we have to do to get out." And then she tried to close the door on the cops, and the cops kind of pushed her way in to help with the orderly eviction. Then they saw evidence of narcotics in plain view. Are we good? Yeah. So that's going to be fine. The you know, once they've been notified by the manager, you know, or an agent, which could be you, once they've been notified that they got to get gone, then the expectation of privacy ends in the room. Now, at the same time, though, we're going to use good judgment, right? We're not going to just storm into the room and act like we own the place and so forth. We're going to use good judgment. We're going to use de-escalation. We're going to, you know, make sure it's orderly. They don't damage property on the way out. But at the end of the day, the law means once you're evicted, you don't get, you know, you don't get 2 hours to get your stuff together. You know, you probably get 10 or 15 minutes, whatever is reasonable under the circumstances. All right, let's look at Dorius. So what happened here was cops entered a hotel room at around 12:30 p.m. and saw plain view evidence. Now, check-in time was noon. The police argued the guy had no standing. Now, I forget what happened to Dorius, you know, whether he was arrested or just kind of like never showed up to the room. Actually, I don't think he was arrested. He just didn't show up. He wasn't very timely on the re-up. Okay. So to renew the renewal. Re-up is probably not the right word. That infers drugs, I guess. But here's the why I throw this case in here. Because Dorius got an affidavit by the housekeeper, and the manager's like, "Hey, you like, are you guys strict? Are you guys strict about this checkout time business, or do you give some grace period? Because at the end of the day, we're only talking like a half an hour or so." And the housekeeper said that, you know, 30 minutes is not much of a difference, right? And not, you know, not a big deal. We're not going to call the police on you and eject you after 30, you know, just because you're over by 30 minutes. And why is this case important? Business practices. As the court said, as a general rule, a defendant's expectation of privacy in a hotel room expires at checkout time. However, we hold that the policies and practices of a hotel may result in the extension past checkout time of a defendant's reasonable expectation of privacy. The existence and duration of that expectation depend on the facts and circumstances in each case. So here's what I'm trying to tell you. This is like a good pro tip, okay? This is a really good pro tip. If you're going to, you know, if you're going to try to argue that a person who's been arrested or has not shown back up to renew the room, that they have lost their expectation of privacy, talk to the manager and say, "Hey, what's your like grace period here? When are you gonna like basically push this guy out, right? You know, when are you gonna be like knock on the door, like, hello, you gotta kind of leave here. What time is that?" No, I'm like, "Well, you know, checkout time is 11, but 1 o'clock, you know, if they're not gone by 1 o'clock, we, you know, we want them gone." That is your time for expiration of expectation of privacy. Okay. I'm telling you, it's a very good pro tip because lawyers, defense attorneys will find that out. And if they find out that you searched within that grace period, it's a very good argument that you violated expectation of privacy, even if they're in jail, because they can always call somebody to go down and re-up on the room, renew the room. So Mike says, "As a park ranger, I often deal with illegal or rule violations in cabins and lodge rooms in a park." So I'm filling the role of both Ellie and cabin manager. Can I eject and then search? Oh, yeah, because look, I know what you mean. Because like you guys own these cabins, right? And so the answer is, look, okay, the answer is this: eject them. Say, "Hey, look, you know, they're smoking marijuana in the cabin, you know, whatever they're doing, that's unlawful." Or, you know, against rules. It doesn't have to be unlawful, but against the rules, But play, you know, but use good judgment. You don't get to just search everything immediately. I don't think that's the right thing to do. Then say, hey, you know, you can watch them get their stuff together. You guys are out of here. They get their stuff out of there. Then anything left behind in a room that they're not taking with them, they're abandoning, or the stuff that belongs to the cabin is yours to search. Okay. Now, so you're welcome. So again, the point here is that the suspect abandons any privacy interest in the room after he's been lawfully ejected. His property, maybe. Now let's look at U.S. versus Ross. What happened here is that this guy, I think he was like outside his motel room, like smoking a cigarette or something like that, maybe with the door open. And he sees the police and he runs, okay? And he flees and they don't catch him, whatever. But then they go search his room. Now look, he was in front of the door and so forth. Do you think the court upheld this? No, right? They're not gonna, they didn't entertain the arguments that just because he ran from the cops, that he actually abandoned his room. Very rarely are the courts are going to hold that you abandoned your domicile just because you ran from the domicile, right? But they may say you abandoned a car if you ran from a car, like, you know, but it's just maybe. But the point is, it's always kind of hard to abandon your house. Okay. Can you execute an arrest warrant at a hotel? Sure, you can, right? As long as you comply with state law. But constitutionally, again, an arrest warrant contemplates, an arrest warrant contemplates that it would be executed at their domicile. Well, a hotel room for an overnight guest, that is their transient lodging, that is their domicile. So if you have a valid arrest warrant, you comply with all state law. For example, in Texas, you shouldn't be serving misdemeanor warrants at domiciles. You should get explicit permission to do that to make before making a forced entry. In Pennsylvania, you're going to have to get a warrant for that particular domicile. But generally speaking, every other place is okay with this. Do you have a reason to believe that they're currently there? And you have a reason to believe that that is where they are an occupant, not just a mere guest, not just a somebody visiting a friend at a motel. You don't want to violate anybody else's rights. That rule is called Stiegeld, right? Stiegeld. You don't want to violate a third party right by going into the room. Let's watch a video.
So we just got a report that there's a male having sex with the carpet in this hotel. So we just happen to be right here. What are you doing?
I guess I'm going to jail, I guess.
Hold on a minute. Is he staying here?
Yes, he is.
Which room is he in? Who's he with?
It's just him.
What was he doing? What's going on?
I just got a call from these two here. I found him laying out there having sex with the floor.
Why are you out here with no clothes on?
Sir, I don't know.
He's intoxicated.
Yeah, I am. Montana. Yeah.
Put your pants on.
Yeah.
Put them on. Put your pants on.
Okay, well.
Those are your pants?
Yeah, these are my pants, yeah. Yeah, these are my pants. Yeah, that's my pants.
So why are you out here having sex with the carpet?
I don't know. Just, I don't know.
Put your pants on
for
me.
Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah, I'm trying.
Come on.
I am. I'm putting them on. Come on. We
All right.
go now. Yep.
Well, we're just, he's
yeah,
gonna
we're gonna go to hell. Yeah.
he's gonna grab a card and
yeah, yep, we're going to jail. Yeah, come on.
What all you have in your room? Anything I need to be
nothing,
concerned
nothing,
about?
Nothing.
Grab your ID. Come on.
Come on. Come on. Shut my up. No. Come on. Come on. Let's go.
All right.
Take me to jail. Come on.
Well, we'll get that part taken care of in just a second. How much of this did you drink today, man?
Oh, God.
Come on, you're almost there. You got one more shoe.
Oh, I got one more shoe. Can I have one more drink?
No.
Oh,
no.
Why?
You've had
Come
plenty
on.
Of drinks.
Come on. Oh,
Put your
my
other shoe
God.
on.
It. Come on, man. You. Let's go to jail. Let's go to jail.
You don't want your stuff?
Nope. I don't want my stuff.
Okay, we'll just throw it all away.
Yep, throw it all away.
Okay.
Throw it all away.
All right, man.
Yep.
All right. So, okay, look, it is a it's a great video. It's friggin' hilarious. It definitely some Reno 911 stuff going on there. So, but look, to look, I show it just to give you some context here. What if the guy was not being arrested? What if he was being evicted, ejected? Gotta be careful with that word, ejected, with a guy like that. But my point is this. Could you go into the room and watch him get dressed and watch him and get his stuff together? Yes. The answer is absolutely yes. Right. Now, did he also abandon his property in the room? The answer is also yes. Okay. Some people like to say, but Anthony, he can't abandon his property because he's too intoxicated. That is not a defense. Okay. Certainly it would be a factor, but it's not a deal killer. Okay. The other thing I want to let you guys know that Teresa, our social media manager, is here. She just put up some links. Guys, I am not going to move 1 inch forward. I'm going to end this webinar right now. Unless you guys sign up for some of your favorite social media, right? I love the YouTube stuff. You know, I love the videos. Instagram is off the hook. You know, for us, for relative. I mean, we're not doing cat videos here. We're trying to do search and seizure. But for us, it's really gaining a lot of traction. So please take a picture of this or just type in there, you know, blue to gold social media, or click on the links is probably the easiest. But, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mark. Okay, you're lucky. You are lucky that Mark is here, because now I'm going to move forward, okay, for my little commercial break. You're lucky. Nathan says, is that hallway considered curtilage? No, no, no. There is no curtilage. There can be. There's always exceptions to every rule, but generally speaking, there is no curtilage in hallways, at apartments. I'm sorry, at motels and hotels. The courts struggle with apartments. We can have that for another day, but not for motels. All right. That's awesome. Okay, fine. I'm moving forward. Tense, our last big section. Let's kind of get into this. Yeah, Nick is the man. Nick is one of the smartest people we have on our Blue to Gold staff. Okay, so. All right, we got tense. Okay, now tense. Okay. Tense, generally speaking, are offered the same protections, right? Just because they're, you know, they're cheaper or more flimsy than a single family home does not mean that these people don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. However, let's talk about some factors that the courts are going to consider. Let me see here. Okay, so a question is, if a hotel wants a guest ejected, but the guest refuses to come to the door, how far would you press the issue? I've had employees try to give us a room key, but we typically refuse for safety issues unless there's something pressing. Well, I can tell you with all confidence that there are a lot of cops here and around this nation that are going to just eject that guy. They're gonna go into the room and they're gonna drag him out. At the same time, though, a lot of my bigger agencies, my LAPDs and my Las Vegas metros and so forth, you know, they might treat that guy as a barricade. And if it's a barricaded suspect, they don't just rush in like that. So I guess my point is, either way is legal, because the guy cannot thwart or, prevent a lawful ejectment just because he won't answer the door. Right. I mean, the hotels have the little lock remover things and so forth. So look, but at the same time, if I was your chief, I would not want to get into a shooting over a guy that was playing his music too loud. Andrew says, if the hotel set up a month-to-month payment and the guest gets mail, do they need to evict the guest? Teresa, do me a favor. Go to our YouTube channel and find there's a video on this about hotels and evictions. Maybe tenants, but the answer is, it's Blue to Gold's legal opinion that a person can create a domicile under these situations, and that, thank you, or thanks, Rick, a person can create a domicile under these situations, and that, yes, 30 days is a long time, and getting the mail there indicates that it probably is a domicile under the Fourth Amendment and that you would need eviction paperwork. That's our view here. However, some states have handled it for you. Illinois, California, Nevada, all these states and more. Those states say 30 days or more is a tenant. Okay. So, but I think constitutionally it's a good argument. So one important factor is notice an opportunity, right, to vacate the illegal encampment. Here's what I want to say, okay? There are two types of illegal encampments, okay? There is L.A. Skid Row, right, where some people live are from L.A. What, it's like 30,000 people, you know, maybe more now. 30,000 people on Skid Row in L.A., okay? They've been allowed to live there for years, okay? And then there's the guy that's setting up his tent on the sidewalk in front of Chipotle. And you find him an hour later, right? Are those two different expectations of privacy? Yes or no? Does the person who's setting up his camp on Skid Row that's been allowed to, that everybody's 30,000 people have been allowed to be there for years, does he have a different expectation of privacy on his tent than the guy, the same guy that sets up his tent in front of Chipotle? The answer is yes. Are they both breaking the law? Are they both breaking the law? The answer is yes. It is not legal in LA to do this, okay? To block the sidewalk and so forth. However, notice an opportunity is what the courts will like to see. Now, let's look at people versus Nishi. Again, I want to remind you that, hey, removing the tent is one thing. Even if the tent was illegally erected in your backyard, does the person likely have a reasonable expectation of privacy in their backpack? I think the answer is more yes than no, okay? More yes than no. They're not, in those factors, they're not abandoning the backpack. What it is that they just don't have expectation of privacy, and they're not abandoning the tent, quite frankly. I don't think that's the right word. What it is, it's all about reasonable expectation of privacy. So the courts seem to be receptive to this whole look into the tent thing to see if anybody's there or whatever versus going through all their personal possessions. I'm just telling you. Now, we're going to talk about anti-camping enforcement. Guys, I got good news for you. Life has gotten a lot easier about this issue because of the U.S. Supreme Court. But let's watch this video first, and I'm going to show you what kind of tipped us all off, why we had a run-and-gun battle with the Ninth Circuit for the last 7 years or so, and finally it came to a head, and the Supreme Court gave us some good news.
Okay, your buddy's here helping
you. My name is Brian.
Hey, Brian.
And I'm helping him move his stuff.
You're helping him move his stuff. So, Chris, you're homeless.
Yeah.
Now, you've been here for a year.
Well, I've been homeless down here for 3 years. But I've been at this spot for a year.
Now, why are you moving?
Because the police came in this morning and said, that if we didn't want to get, if I didn't want to go to jail, if we didn't want to go to jail, we had to get all this stuff out of here by this afternoon and have everything gone. Well, they were going to just, they knew who we were, and they'd just pick up some of the stuff and take it to the impound and put a warrant out or arrest us or something. You know? So I don't want to go to jail for it because I don't have no lawyer. See, I think what they're doing is against Supreme Court rulings going all the way back to the 1930s with the vagrancy laws, which they struck down. You see, all these places, all these cities and towns in California during the 30s, actually it started during the Dust Bowl period of the late 20s, but they had vagrancy laws, you see, and the Supreme Court knocked that down during the 1930s. So I don't know what the legal precedents were. So you would need a lawyer and some research and stuff like that. But for the city and the county to continually to run people around while they've got this economic situation and the real estate situation that prevails in the city and the county of Sacramento, I kind of think if nothing else, you could try them for cruel and unusual punishment. You see, well, the crime is being poor and homeless.
All right. I'm going to talk about Mark's question in a second here. It's a very good question. Okay, so he's saying, you know, you heard what he said. He said, you know, it's basically if you enforce these rules against the homeless, then it's cruel and unusual punishment. And the Ninth Circus agreed. Okay, in a case called Martin versus the city of Boise, Idaho, there, you know, basically, you know, Boise was doing a bang up job, being pretty proactive on people sleeping in parks and so forth. And, you know, they have some shelters, but sometimes they weren't available, or sometimes they weren't available for these particular people because maybe they had to be sober, or maybe they were kicked out before. The point is that, you know, they didn't necessarily consider alternatives. And the Ninth Circuit said, you know, that's cruel, right? That's cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, you know, these guys got nowhere else to go, right? So all human beings have to sleep. And so forth. So I'll read you a couple of quotes here. They said, the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment bars a city from prosecuting people criminally for sleeping outside on public property when those people have no home or other shelter to go to. Okay. Well, first of all, they are saying, you know, public property, not private property. Private property is always going to be, you know, fairly easy to enforce. I mean, again, you know, you set up a tent in your backyard, right? And so, you know, cruel and unusual punishment. And so now this came to a head in the city of Grants Pass, Oregon versus Johnson, a case from 2024. And Grants Pass, again, was enforcing their laws, you know, sleeping in public, blocking sidewalks, you know, putting bedrolls on the sidewalk and all this kind of stuff. And they vacated. They got rid of the Martin case. And I'm telling you, like, this is massive. This is huge. And this is why this case is going to help me answer Mark's and Josh's questions. So they said, homelessness is complex. It causes are many. So may be the public policy responses required to address it. At bottom, the question this case presents is whether the Eighth Amendment grants federal judges primary responsibility for assessing those causes and devising those responses. It does not, right? So they also said that enforcing these laws does not fall under cruel and unusual punishment. You know why? The Eighth Amendment is not about enforcement. It's about the punishment. So if the city said, you know, every time somebody camps outside, it's gonna be $1,000 fine, you know, or it's gonna be 60 days in jail, you know, as a first offense, maybe we have a punishment issue, but enforcing it, just initially enforcing it, is not an Eighth Amendment issue. It's a due process issue. It's a Fourth Amendment issue, right? And it's a right of travel issue. It's those things. Okay, so at the end of the day, we are enforcing it. Okay, so going back to kind of like use good judgment, let me just kind of share with you that we're almost done here with the webinar, but I got to tell you that homeless people have more lawyers than rich people. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when I went to law school, some of the most liberal, bleeding heart people in the world go to law school. Okay, it's just, it's a profession that attracts a lot of people like that. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have compassion. I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you that, you know, it's my peers they will work tirelessly. They will donate hundreds of their hours, legal hours, to defend people who cannot afford to pay them. But a rich person will never get a free lawyer. So the point is, a lot of these cases are litigated. So we want to use good judgment. And really, you know, when I speak to my clients about, hey, how are we going to enforce this, especially after Grants Pass, it's all about, not all about, it's a lot of it's about notice and opportunity, okay? Give these people notice and opportunity to leave. Also, there really should be a place for them to go, okay? If you are going to tell them, and I'm just making, this is my opinion here, if you're going to tell them, hey, you cannot sleep on this park bench, where is there a place that is accessible that they could go? The city of Elko in Nevada set up an urban camping location for homeless people. It had a dumpster there. It had porta potties there. And that's about it. Okay. Everything else was on your own. It had a little, you know, section that you could kind of like urban camp. And I got it. And it was far away by the train tracks. It was not desirable property for development. And I got to tell you, genius. In my view, genius, because At least you have an option. In Las Vegas, they have a multi-million dollar budgeted homeless shelter that never runs out of beds. The bed's on the floor. They have a bedroll on the floor. The daytime, they just walk around and, you know, they can take showers and so forth. I got to tell you, great for a big city like that. The point is that there should be a place in your locality where they can go. That's great. In the city hall, I wouldn't put them at city hall personally. That's not me. But okay, now going back to Mark's question. Now I can't give you legal advice, but I'll just give you my legal opinion, right? My legal education. In our city, we can remove a tent after giving a 48-hour notice. Do they get notice? I told you, notice an opportunity, right? Then we go store any property valued over $50. They probably store it for what, 30 days, Mark? Is that your policy? 30 days is probably pretty common. And then they if it's soiled or it's food or it's dangerous, they're not going to store it. 60 days is even better. So the point is, yes, those are the things that I'm looking for. But, you know, after this grant's passed, Clark County, Nevada passed, you know, various ordinances that prohibit urban camping. And it's all lawful. In my view, it's all lawful. It's all in line with the Supreme Court case and so forth. Okay. Okay. So do you have a written policy on inventory? I don't know. Yeah, you should have a policy, by the way. And if you want to hire Blue to Gold to write that policy for you, let us know. We do sell policies. Mm-hmm. So what about homeless subjects trespassing an area not in a registered campsite, utilizing a camping tent that appears to be lived in? A search of the tent, we concluded, based off trespass. You know, probably fine. I mean, do they know that they can't be there, right? Is it more like Chipotle than it is the Skid Row? Probably fine. Yes, and Angela says, great webinar. You're welcome. I appreciate that. Are we going to get a recording? The answer is yes. The recording will be in your mailbox within 30 days. Okay, so takeaways. The takeaways here is, number one, evictions. Focus on officer safety, need to make an orderly eviction, okay? Use good judgment, okay? You know, one of my friends on this webinar said, you know, if they're barricaded and not coming to the door, we're not going to barge in. Let me tell you something. I can't fault you for that. I can't, with all the litigation, all the damn lawsuits happening against police officers, I can't fault you for that. Okay. I really can't. But at the same time, you know, we should probably figure out a solution to get those people out. At least drop in some OC through the air vents, something reasonable versus kicking in the door. I'm joking. This is going to be recorded. I got to say, that's a joke. Okay. Arizona cops, RVs, they are usually vehicles, not domiciles. So you are allowed to search them under the motor vehicle exception, even if they live in it, but you search it as if you had a warrant. Tents, if lawfully erected or allowed to stay, treat like a home. Skid Row is a little different than Chipotle. So give them notice and opportunity to vacate. Okay. So my last thing is, my question is, did you find this information useful? I really hope you did. We're going to do some trivia real quick. And if you have any follow-up questions, I'll let you guys know. Please, 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 guys, I really work hard for you. I really do. I take a lot of my family time away. I love what I do. But if you're not following us on social media, then I guess I'm not. It's, you know, I can use my time for something else. So Teresa, take a snapshot of this. But all these Blue to Gold resources are out there for you guys. Please follow us on any social media platform that you enjoy. For the people who are watching us on demand, don't forget that if you can't make one of our webinars, just sign up for them at bluetogold.com. And you'll get a copy of this webinar automatically sent to your email. Okay. And if you're watching us on YouTube, come visit us on the live stream on Zoom. You don't need a camera. You don't need a microphone. All you got to do is show up and join. Literally, there's hundreds and hundreds of cops here today on taking a Wednesday morning just to kind of learn something new. I'm going to end the webinar for the recording. For those who are watching on demand, God bless you guys. I appreciate you and stay safe.